Hello and welcome. You're listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Corey Elia. Running on Air is a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. In this episode, we're talking with candidates from District 3. We want you to join the conversation. You can call the air room with questions for candidates at 503-231-8187. You can message a question on the website, kboo.fm, and you can also email us your questions at runningonair@kboo.org. Let's meet our candidates for the day. So we have two candidates for District 3 today. First one is Rex Burkholder, and then the other one is Jesse Cornett. I'll let you guys do a quick introduction of yourselves.
Great. Rex Burkholder, a longtime KBOO member and listener. I am running for District 3 City Council to make sure that the city runs well and that we have good leadership during this major transition. I live in the city of Portland, in Southeast Portland, and have been here for 46 years.
Thank you. And Jesse?
I'm Jesse Cornett. I've worked around policy and electoral politics over the past two decades, and I believe there's a lot we can do better in this city, which is why I decided to step up and run. I, too, live in Southeast Portland, just around the corner from Rex.
So I went digging, and I actually found backgrounds on you guys from the Portland Mercury's reporting on the candidates for District 3. I'll just quote them real quick. So for Rex, it says, quote, Burkholder previously served on the Metro Council for more than a decade. He's got deep roots in nonprofits and coalitions, having started Portland-based nonprofits like the Bicycle Transportation Alliance and the Coalition for a Livable Future. He currently serves on the Oregon Sustainability Board, as well as the boards of Unite Oregon, which organizes and trains leaders in immigration and refugee communities, and the Mount St. Helens Institute, which offers environmental education and science-based adventures. I got that all correct?
That's all right.
Cool. Yeah. And then for Jesse, the Mercury wrote, quote, Cornett has run for office before and worked on the last two presidential campaigns for Senator Bernie Sanders. State records show Cornett previously worked for ADP, a payroll software company. He also worked as the interim policy and advocacy director for Oregon Recovers, an organization he's worked for with in several capacities. Cornett has also served as an adjunct instructor at Portland State University teaching political science.
Specifically legislative process, which is the discipline that will help in this new form of government. I'm actually the policy and advocacy director for Oregon Recovers. The interim title was shed a while ago.
Okay, cool.
And my second stint in that role, actually.
Cool. Okay, so we'll just jump right into the questions. We sent a survey out to some of our listeners, and we got some questions back, but we also created some of our own. So we'll just jump right into it. What do you think is an issue facing Portland that is not getting enough attention right now? We'll start with Jesse.
Well, I think the issue that's getting the most attention is also the issue that's not getting enough attention, and that's what we're doing to take care of the homeless population and how we're going to get ourselves out of this particular crisis.
Nice. Thank you. And then Rex.
Well, I think the question I see that's not getting addressed quite enough is what do we do about the education system we have and, again, connecting to our economic future, that our kids are not graduating from schools, our university is underfunded, and we really rely on that as a city to have people who are skilled and have the experiences that they can actually put to work. And we also connect to the housing issue is we are losing people because young people can't afford to rent or buy in the community. So they're connected there. How do we maintain that? A strong economy for local residents and make sure they have opportunity.
Okay, so both of you actually just touched on a subject that I had written for a question further down the road, but I'll just bring it to the fore. Portland is facing a major housing affordability crisis, creating the situation with homelessness we are experiencing. How will you work to address this if you get elected to city council? We'll start with Rex Burkholder.
Sure, and this is a national problem. And as you heard last night in the debates with Vice President Harris brought up, is that the goal is to create 3 million new housing units in the United States. And Portland is part of that. We just have not been building housing units so that the price of existing units go up. There's things that the city can do, streamlining regulations, changing zoning so that it's easier to build. and then also using public lands that aren't being used right now to support affordable housing. About a third of the cost of housing is just the land. And there is land sitting around that the public already owns that could be used and given to a nonprofit housing developer to create long-term affordable housing.
Nice. Thank you. And then over here to Jesse Cornett.
You know, sure. If you look at the enormity of the crisis, what we need to be doing right now is build about 5,000 units each and every year in Portland. We are at 500 housing starts to date, so we need to kickstart that process. There's a lot that the city can do without even getting into the safety, the climate. There's a lot that we must stay the course with. But what we've not done is we've not been especially nimble. When there's a building boom, we go out and we hire all new staff to do permitting, and then the building subsides and we lay them all off. And when the market is ready to build again, we have to go through that maddening process all over again, which is slowing things down. And part of the reason we're at 500, Rex mentions vacant land. I'm not sure that we have the inventory that's public owned that some people think, but privately owned, there's a lot. And we should be talking about mechanisms such as land value taxes in order to encourage growth there. And as part of encouraging that growth, we also have to have a permitting system that's able to keep up with the demand that we're then going to push. There's lots of little things that we're just not thinking about as we're talking about moving into the future. COVID changed the workforce. It's never going to be the way it exactly was before. We can't change that. Amazon changed retail. We're still going to need to have places to dine, and people are going to want places to drink. But ground floor retail and having that requirement is a little maddening. Just on my bike ride over here today, I went by 9th and Southeast Morrison in a building where I lived. One of the Goat Blocks buildings was constructed, I think, in 2017. There's, I don't know, 3,000, 3,500 square feet on the corner that has never been developed because the city required that to be ground floor retail. It's never going to be used. And that is sunk costs that developers cannot get around. Those are the kind of common sense measures that we should be considering moving forward.
Thank you. So, like, there is just all this opportunity to say what the city is not doing right. But this next question is actually, what do you think the city is doing really well right now? And how would you continue that? Or how do you see yourself fitting into that situation? We'll start with Jesse Cornett.
What a great question. What the city is doing well is we're acknowledging that what we've done hasn't worked and we're completely upending the system. We're here today because we're running for an entirely new system of government. We're running in multi-member districts. It's going to be ranked choice voting. We looked at our reality, and we knew it wasn't right, and we knew we had the power as people to change it. So what we're doing is that. We're doing many other things that I think are right. We started down the path with the Portland Street Response. We need to expand that. We're not doing it well enough. Expand and go 24/7. Portland Clean Energy Fund is a wonderful program that's going to ensure Portland remains a leader in combating climate change, which if we don't do as a global community, we're never going to be able to get to the root causes of some of the other issues we're facing right now. So those are just, three things I think we are doing well.
Thank you. And then over here to Rex.
Yeah, well, my perspective is a little bit colored by the fact I moved here in the late 1970s, and when we had unemployment of 25% and interest rates were 18%, and the inner city where I moved into was segregated and full of crime, and the police was a racist occupying force. We've changed a lot since then. And most of it is because I think the citizens have come together. And when you talked about the things like the Portland Clean Energy Fund, the Housing Services Fund, those have come from the public. The work I did on bicycle transportation, that was a public activity. The stopping the freeways, building light rail, started with citizens. And our neighborhood association system, that's how I got started. Okay, do you want to volunteer to help do a cleanup? Okay, I'll do that. And that got into where I am today. And many other people have gotten involved. I think that's what Portland has really led the world, because we have this active citizen engagement that government, for the most part, has always encouraged through supporting neighborhood associations and then being responsive when people come up with great ideas. You know, we had to sue the city of Portland to get bicycle lanes, but we won and the city said, okay, this makes sense, let's go. So a citizen movement has made a big difference, and we do support that, and that's a positive thing that happens in Portland all the time. And I think the city has done a good job in not opposing that and, you know, sometimes slow to move, but good things have come of that.
Thank you. So this next one is, what in your opinion, is the single most crucial issue absolutely that must be dealt with in the next 10 years? We'll start over here with Jesse.
Housing. Housing and housing. We've talked about the numbers already, 5,000. We're at 500. If you look at the number one cause of homelessness in America, it's a lack of affordable housing. We're falling behind. I talk a lot about addiction and compassionate approaches to addiction in the course of my campaign as well. Addiction is not a driver of homelessness. In fact, it's the other way around. If you're out on the street, there's a cycle. You're living in your car. It gets towed. Suddenly, you're under a bridge. Many of your listeners know this cycle. If you weren't an addict before, you are going to become an addict now just to try to cope. You don't want to sleep at night. You're taking something to stay awake. During the day, you want to take something else to give you the illusion of rest. It's a pretty vicious cycle, and so we have to address the housing issue.
Thank you, and thank you for bringing attention to that. There are a lot of people who disingenuously try and say the drugs are what's driving the homelessness crisis, not the housing crisis.
Can I add? Just, I mean, I think, I mean, you know, that those can be drivers to, you know, part of, you know, the reasons you can lose your job because of that. You can lose your partner because of that. I'm a big fan of data and data informed decisions, and that's what I'll do as an elected official. And the data shows it's an affordable housing issue.
Nice. And then sliding over here to Rex Burkholder?
Yeah, I'll say ditto to what Jesse just said. Really important. Another one I would throw in there is the energy hub, they call it, which is 300 million gallons of flammable fuels located on unstable soils next to the Willamette River. Two things. One, we say we want to get off fossil fuels, so we don't need those in the long term, and we need to figure out how to get rid of them. The short term, we need to figure out how to protect them from wildfire. Easy, you can imagine, Forest Park sparking a flame, or a train derailing, or, God forbid, the big earthquake. What's going to happen to half the city of Portland? It will disappear. And so that's an issue that in the next 10 years, in addition to making sure people have a place to live, we make sure we don't blow up half the city.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you so much. And so real quick, for you listening at home, you're listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Corey Elia. Today, we're speaking with candidates from District 3. I have here with me candidates Rex Burkholder and Jesse Cornett. Join the conversation by calling in your questions to the Air Room at 503-231-8187 or by messaging us on KBOO website, kboo.fm. All right, so let's get right back into the conversation. So when we surveyed our listeners, one of the top things that was on the list for concerns for them was climate change. Describe the impact climate change is having here in Portland and how you would actually address that if you were elected to city council. We'll start over here with Rex.
Yeah, Corey, this is obviously a major issue that sometimes gets set aside because of the immediate things that are happening. This year, amazingly, we didn't have any smoke issues in Portland. And we start to forget how that impact of climate change was as wildfire. And this is the world's worst wildfire season in history in Oregon. The wind just happens to be blowing the other direction, right? So we haven't had that immediate here. So air quality, which impacts lower income people, especially because of where they live and what their housing is like. Deaths from heat is very common, and they kind of are hidden in the statistics. And I think the other piece is, and so what we need to do about that, of course, is continue replacing the automobile with other forms of transportation, like bicycling and transit, which we have to think about how do we adapt that with the new ways of work. People aren't commuting downtown. And then also look at, should we really be investing in bigger freeways? And we are. You know, some of the stuff is kind of, okay, we'll do a nice thing like cover the freeway in the Albina area, but that's part of expanding the freeway. Do we really want to make that deal when we know long-term we need to change how we move people around and what fuels we use? Huge issue. There's things that the city can do to stand up at the state level because we are the biggest metropolitan, biggest city in the state. We have most legislators of any other city, and we should be able to have a strong agenda that moves us forward.
Nice. Thank you. And then sliding over here to Jesse Cornett, same question.
Well, I think you might hear either of us say, or if not by the word, it's sentiment of ditto a lot today. And We're seeing the impacts. I didn't intend to come here today to sound like a one-note Johnny, but let's talk about the impact of climate change. We've seen specific instances, such as Hurricane Katrina, where, as a result of climate events, Portland has seen in-migration climate refugees. As the Earth's temperature continues to rise, folks are going to move from Mexico City to San Francisco and San Francisco to here. As much as it doesn't feel like it on Thursday, Friday, we're a cooler climate here still for many parts of the world. And just what I said a few minutes ago, what's the number one cause of homelessness? It's lack of affordable housing. Affordable housing. What we have is limited when we have migration, in migration because of climate emergencies around the country or around the world. That stock is going to be further taxed. The prices are going to go up, and it's going to exacerbate our housing crisis.
Thank you. So you guys touched on this a minute ago, at least Rex did. The Zenith oil deal that was negotiated out of public eye by Commissioners Rubio and Ryan, it allows Zenith to continue its operations for the next 5 years. What will your position be on continued fossil fuel infrastructure here in Portland? We'll start with Jesse.
You know, Rex and I both rode our bicycles down here. We're both people, actually, I'll follow in your footsteps when it comes to being the environmental, being environmentally minded. So I've actually enjoyed a lot of conversations through the course of my campaign and learned a lot about environmental issues that I knew before, but I've definitely sharpened the saw over the course of this past year. And the reality is that we have to move away from a fossil fuel future. That was harder to say than it should have been.
I'm not going to
fossil fools exactly. Yeah. So we both rode our bikes down here. When I have to do a longer trip now, it's in an electric car. As the city, what we need to do is we need to work in electrifying our fleet, helping build out the infrastructure here, and do everything that we can as a city to move away from fossil fuels. And I think as permits are up, the city should look at them with a very wary eye. I think what we're going to have with a 12-member council that's going to have committees, I don't know if we'll have specifically an environmental committee, but we're going to have a group, a subset of the city council that will actually take a look at that. And those are going to be decisions that are going to be made in the public, because we're going to have public committee hearings where people can show up and testify. The way that our government exists now, that level of input is a challenge, and that's one of the reasons I supported changing it to what we're going to have at the start of next year.
Nice. And then over here to Rex.
Yeah, well, just to talk about how the process works, I think we have a goal in the city of Portland already adopted to get off fossil fuels. I believe it's by 100% by 2050. Well, what's the path to get there? When I was on the Metro Council, I chaired something called the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation, which is 29 leaders, county commissioners, mayors, the head of ODOT, sitting around a table and doing planning about the future of transportation. And when I got there, basically it was a big, long list of projects, and everybody's favorite project were on the list. And then they just would fight over who got the money when, and most of them were highway projects, right? They're dealing with federal dollars, which are flexible and you could do anything with. I led them through a process of saying, well, where are we trying to get to? What's the goals we have based on the policies we've already adopted? And it was about dealing with climate change, reducing car travel, increasing transit, increasing alternative uses. And I walked them through a process where agree on the goals, agree on the policies, and then, okay, what's the list going to be? Well, everybody freaked out because their projects weren't going to be on the list because they're big highway expansions. And so we said, well, hold it. Which policies do you want to change? Do you want to go back where? But to hold the government accountable to actually taking the actions to achieve the goals that they have. And in this case, if we are saying we're not going to be using fossil fuels in 25 years, why are we building more capacity? You know, why aren't we seeing a drawdown, a shrinking of the capacity over time so we get to zero by 2050? Right now, like I said, 300 million gallons. Oh, my God. I mean, that's a lot. And how are we going to get to zero? We have to start. And approving Zenith was not starting that path. It was ignoring that decision to cut back on our use of fossil fuels in the region.
Thank you. So the next question ties in directly with that one. So the city council kind of followed a zigzag pathway to the Zenith agreement. Will you consider trying to overturn it if you guys get elected to city council? We'll start with Rex Burkholder.
Well, I think it gets on the agenda. Again, we're going to have 12 people. They're going to have a lot on their plate. How do we move forward on these things? There's long-range actions we need to be thinking about. There's short-range activities we have to do. I think it's going to be interesting to say, how do we figure out what's important? And I think that's the major challenge of the first 6 months to a year of this new organization, is to bring people with very different approaches to work, very different ideas, and getting organized. Jesse mentioned that we assume we'll have some committees. You know, we don't know yet. You know, this is all up in the air. But again, how people organize as groups are typically saying, what are the areas that are important to work on? Who wants to work on them? How do you, let's set an agenda and set some goals. So that's going to be the biggest challenge of the first part of this change, is to do that. And then we will have a nice a list, I'm sure, a mile long, all the great things that can be done in the city. And then we need to figure out how to do that.
Cool. And then sliding right over here to Jesse Cornett.
Look, the city council kicked the can down the road for two consecutive years on signing a contract with the county and the Joint Office of Homelessness Services. What the voters, your voters, your KBOO listeners voted for, created district offices. The city decided against doing that. The city decided that we're only going to get one staffer. The city decided we get five more years with Zenith. Oh, and by the way, let's go back to where I started. We decided we're going to sign a three-year contract with Joint Office on their way out the door, but they get it, by the way, cutely timed on October 15th, a look back period at that, for politics sake, since everyone on City Council is running for mayor. And the reality is that whether it's Zenith or whether it's any of those that I just mentioned, all bets are off. We're going to have the discussions on what's best for our city. My nuance in this understands that there are going to be significant financial implications. And like with everything else, that's something that we have to consider.
Cool. Thank you so much. Okay, so this one is basically, so what specific steps are you taking now to make sure that you are effective in office if you win? We'll start with Jesse.
I am fortunate that I got into this race almost 14 months ago. So I have been meeting folks and getting up to speed on issues that I knew and issues that I did not. I've also been spending the last 14 months community building, getting out there, not just knocking on doors, but holding neighborhood coffees and any number of events. So when there's something that I need help with, I have somebody to turn to. I think my longer form, non-transactional approach to this election will serve me well if I'm elected.
Nice. Thank you. And then sliding over here to Rex Burkholder.
Well, I hearken back to my experience of being elected to Metro Council. I was the head of the policy director for the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. I had a few hundred volunteers on my campaign. And when I got elected, I had friends say, oh, great, now we don't have to worry about anything because you're elected. It's like, well, hold it. You know, I'm one of seven votes. And the things that I've been advocating for have not been all that popular, and they had to be pushed by the public. So I said, you need to see me as the target of your advocacy now. You need to stay active. You need to keep working with me. So that's a part of this, is this making sure that the public is holding us accountable, and having that network that I have out in the community is important to that. People can talk to me and expect me to respond. The other part is, and I didn't know about the city business, so I spent a good part of the spring talking to the police, talking to the Water Bureau, talking to the solid waste folks, and saying, you know, how does this work? This is $8 billion business, and it's different than just policy making. It's also about how do you operate. And learning that process and learning about all those different components has been a major part of the first part of my campaign. And now I'm knocking on doors and talking to people. And that's the retail part of the campaign. But again, I want to be able to walk in and say, I have a basic knowledge of most operations of the city. But again, there's going to be areas that I know more. I know more about transportation, you know, and others know more about housing, you know, et cetera. How do we work together? And that will be the key part, is that building that collaborative team to work on guiding the city.
Nice. Thank you. Okay, so we talked a little bit about your background. What made you want to run for city council this year? We'll start with Rex Burkholder.
Well, you know what? My friend Bud Clark, former mayor, told me that being in elected office is like joining the army. You go in and do your duty, and when you're done, you run as fast away from it as you can. And, you know, I thought I was done. I had done 12 years on the Metro Council, very similar government, a council with a manager, and, you know, thought I'd done my share. Then the change in government came up, and I thought, well, you know, this election will probably be friendly, right, Jesse? It'd be friendlier because it's not like one-to-one. And you can say, well, there's three great people, you know, who can represent our district. So that part attracted me that I could actually run. The second one with voter financing, instead of begging rich people for money and feeling like you're selling your soul, you're just saying, hey, can you give me $20? And, you know, if you think I would do a good job. And that those made the barrier to entry lower. And then I thought also, you know, I'm only 68, you know, Trump is 78 or 90 or whatever he is. You know, he still thinks he can run for president. I have tons of energy. I still committed to the city, still volunteer, still do a lot of work in the community. And then I have a business that works with nonprofits. So I'm tied into that kind of exciting energy. And I said, I got the energy. I got the way to do it. I know I've been here, done this, and thought, okay, I'll offer my skills to the city.
Thank you. And then over here to Jesse Cornett.
Look, I've been around the political process a long time. I've passed some major legislation, I'll talk about some more of that in a brief second. But I ran for office when I was younger. I didn't fare very well, and I didn't think that I would ever run again. Funded buildings at Portland State University. I was the lead staff person to modernize Oregon's campaign finance disclosure system. Very geeky to say. And after my time at Portland State, I went off. I worked in the business world for a while, owned and operated a couple of successful businesses. There have been times where I thought, no, I should stay away from this stuff. But I got recruited in 2016 to work for Bernie Sanders' first presidential campaign. I was honored to be one of the first dozen or so hires for the 2020 campaign and spent 16 months traveling the nation, the final 6 months of those tied to the hip with Bernie. If he was outside of his house or his hotel room, I was with him. And that was pretty neat. We did some neat things. We went to Homestead Child Detention Center and protested where our nation is literally caging kids. We took a busload of folks up to Canada to buy insulin at 10 cents on the dollar. And those aren't municipal issues. Those aren't Portland issues. But I understand how who we elected at every level impacts the lives of everyone in our country. And in fact, it can be a more direct connection here at the local level. After that campaign, I came back to Portland. I got offered a contract working with an organization called Oregon Latino Health Coalition. They came to me and asked me to get them $10 million for a pilot project so undocumented Oregonians might have access to healthcare, poor, you know, migrant farm workers, refugees, and such. We had a good budget cycle in 2021. We asked for them to fully fund it instead. We got $150 million that biennium for the second year of the biennium. It's a little over $300 million each biennium moving forward. For me, the reason that I highlight that is because that shows that not only am I compassionate, but I have a very collaborative style. The Oregon Association of Nurseries on one side politically and SEIU on the other in Salem. Those aren't folks that get together at the same table and agree on much, but I got them to on this particular bill. So that's all to say that I think I've got a collaborative style. I've got a compassionate style. This whole while I've looked around and I've not been real happy with all the decisions that come out of City Hall. I've matured to a point as a candidate where I look and say, well, maybe I won't like all the decisions that come out when I'm there as well, or the votes that I have to take, but at least I'll get to do the research, I'll get to have the conversation, I'll get to go out to our community and talk about why we're doing what we're doing. So I think my experience makes me well-suited for this, and I'm excited.
Thank you.
I think I answered the question. I went astray there for a minute.
No, you're fine.
Sorry to filibuster.
Thank you. And we will be right back after a short break. Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Corey Elia. Today we're speaking with candidates from District 3. I have here with me candidates Rex Burkholder and Jesse Cornett. Join the conversation by calling in your questions to the air room at 503-231-8187 or by messaging us on KBOO website, kboo.fm. Support for Running on Air comes from KBOO members and the League of Women Voters. More information about the candidates on your ballot can be found on the League of Women Voters of Portland's website, lwvpdx.org. The League has videos of candidate interviews and forums, as well as links to candidates' written answers to questions and explanations of ballot measures. That's lwvpdx.org. Okay, so jumping right back into this, we actually have a listener question that came in. What do the candidates think about a tax increment financing, or TIF, being used by Prosper Portland to fund upscale developments? Is that something they support? We'll start over here with Jesse Cornett.
All right. So tax increment financing is a very geeky tool. And I'm guessing Rex, having served on a government that doesn't necessarily impact in the short term from it, will have some very sharp thoughts. It's a tool, and if we want to talk about how to gentrify, that's what we do. And it can be used, and it can be used responsibly. We're using it in Cully right now, where we're funding energy improvements and such, and that's a way to consider it. But if you back up and you look at what it does, basically it freezes the tax base. Let's say you're paying a dollar a year in taxes overall. It's going to freeze that dollar. The city, whoever, the county collects it, and instead of it going to the county, the schools, and all of the other the water districts, for the next 30 years or however many years that district exists, those jurisdictions, including Metro, get capped. So they were getting, let's say, 16 cents of that dollar. For the next 30 years, instead of getting 17 cents the next year, and maybe it goes up to 30 cents over the course of 30 years, they're just getting 16 cents. But 30 years later, because of the increment, suddenly they're going to be getting 70 cents a year because of the high-value projects that were put in there. So it can be used responsibly, and it can do some good things for the community. If you look at very specifically the Pearl District and South Waterfront, those are two examples of how we've done it, where we've gentrified, we've relocated folks. Mississippi is another example. So conceptually, I support some use of it, but we cannot just do it as widely as we have. And just to wrap up a wonky, longer answer, what we cannot do is we cannot continually extend those, because the other jurisdictions in your taxing base rely on those dollars someday.
Thank you. And then switching over here to Rex Burkholder.
Yeah, well, tax increment financing is a tool. And the question is how to use that tool. A hammer can be used to build a building. It can be used in a violent way. So I think the issue is who controls that and what are the implications of its use in different ways. The organization I'm part of, Unite Oregon, is building a housing and child care and business incubator on Southeast 122nd in a building and a lot that they own. They will rely on receiving some of the tax increment financing to make this work. For example, well, one reason is because they're being asked to do $120,000 of sidewalk improvement by the city because they're doing a development, which is another issue to talk about, because here's a nonprofit doing good work and they're being dinged because we have this fee-based system for doing improvements in our community. But again, it's a tool, I think the difference is who controls the decisions about what the investments are. And that it's been an appointed group of well-connected people who didn't necessarily represent the interest of the whole city, but represent the interest of certain sectors. And so how you use it is what's important, not the nature of the tool itself.
Nice. Thank you. And then sliding over here to Jesse Cornett. Oh, sorry.
I'll always add to it.
No, sorry. Mute his mic. Quit. Mute his mic.
So suddenly we're Kamala and Trump. Who's who?
But yeah, okay. So both of you guys are running for District 3. Okay, so what are some of the unique challenges that you think District 3 is facing, and what do you think we should be doing about those challenges? And we'll go with your expert.
Yeah, every district is actually very similar. Most of the city of Portland is single-family housing with small business districts mixed in with them. They all have freeways driving through them and impacting them. But each has something unique in it, okay? And I would call our uniqueness, besides I love Mount Tabor, I go up there and take out weeds with the weed warriors. It's nice to have a great park there. But the thing that's unique is the Central East Side. We have an area that for years was a small manufacturing and an employment center that has, through some recent changes in zoning, started taking in a lot more high-density housing, which is great. It's now full of people at night versus being just a desert. It does have issues because it is still a lot of industrial areas that attract, provide safe places, well, not safe places, places for people without housing to go. But it also has this huge, couple huge opportunities. One is the OMSI site, which is moving forward in terms of providing, I think, 1,200 units of housing, plus a center for tribes of the Northwest. And then it also has this thing called the I-5 freeway, which just, it blows me. Well, I know why it got there, because the freeway, the river used to be a sewer. It used to be horribly polluted. So putting a freeway next to it wasn't a big deal. We had one on both sides of the river. But imagine if we took that freeway and got rid of it, either burying it or just shutting it down and making that riverfront open. You know, there is a long-term vision of saying billions of dollars of opportunity there, a new possible riverfront park, a new neighborhood. But the freeway and the railroad need to be buried, relocated, something, because they don't belong in a modern urban center anymore. And that is this incredible opportunity that in that district. So that, when I think of what is different about District 3, that would be the one piece that we could look at and say, how can we envision a different future here?
And then sliding over here to Jesse Cornett.
Yes, this is actually a great tie-in to the last question, because we are going to – we aspire to create a very vibrant community down there using very specifically tax increment financing. It's going to be interesting to see how that project rolls out. It's definitely another longer-term decision that's been made by a city council that's not going to be in place in 6 months from now. Before I dip, actually, I'm going to take a kind of a sideways. We have, for me, something that I think Rex and I are going to agree on this as well. We have Powell Boulevard that runs right through the district. It's a state-owned highway. I have to cross it at least once a week on my bicycle. I go to where the crossing is at 28th. I still don't feel safe doing that. The sidewalks aren't ideal up and down it. Cars go too fast. And so long as there are state-owned highways disguised as city streets, we're going to have significant safety challenges. And that is one that really hits marginalized communities in our district more than a lot of other things. Back to the Central East Side, again, it's a tax. It's going to be a TIF district, an urban renewal district. I think the one thing that I'll layer on there that's really unique is there's a train that goes right through there, and we're trying to figure out how to develop. There's an active proposal to do a music venue that's going to be owned by a Saudi-backed multinational corporation that wants to park all the cars on the street across the train tracks from that venue. That's a very unique issue. I think longer term, we need to look at some solutions to having a train go through there. By the way, this is an issue that's really come more to the fore in recent years, because the train companies have realized that there is an efficiency. Over the last 3 years, trains have gotten, I think, 50% plus longer. And so we've got to look at how to resolve that issue in that unique little area as well.
Thank you. And so we'll just jump right into this next question. Economic affordability and livability was another top priority from our listeners in the survey we conducted. Things are expensive. What can you do as a city councilor to address this for Portlanders? And we'll start over here with Jesse Cornett.
I think it's a blend of just about everything that we're talking about. There is a reality that housing is going to be more expensive because of limited supply. And that's going to drive the cost of quite literally everything else. So as the city continues to help keep costs down, as well as funding housing opportunities for more, it's going to overall help the economy. So I think that there are many other ways as well. We have a city council that is very small and has been very insulated. I think expanding it, what we're going to have is we're going to have people that are very in tune to their districts. And I think it comes down to things that you wouldn't necessarily think about. And I'll wrap this up. Let's look at grocery consolidation, Kroger and Safeway and Albertsons and Fred Meyer. And, you know, having literally just one monolith grocery company in Portland is going to ensure that there's all been a monopoly on pricing. There have been folks that have been within those companies, the UFCW, the union workers that are already protesting the working conditions that are only going to get worse as costs rise. So it's a combination of all of those things, I think.
Nice. Thank you. And then sliding over here to Rex Burkholder.
Yeah, if you could just repeat the question again. Sorry.
Real quick. Economic affordability and livability was another top priority for our listeners. Things are expensive. What can you do as a city councilor to address this for Portlanders?
Well, limited, limited. But there, for one thing that I'd like us to reconsider, and it's a project that's already three times over budget and 4 years late, which is the new water filtration plant that is being built outside the urban growth boundary in farmland. And I can understand why, yes, it's the perfect solution, but it's billions of dollars more than just doing an ultraviolet treatment for cryptosporidium, which is the EPA required treatment that needs to happen. So so we have this massive project that's already doubled or tripled people's water bills, okay? Instead of being a couple hundred dollars a month, it may be $800. And that's an individual household. Now, if you think about, a business that uses a lot of water or something like this, and this decision was made, basically they're insulated because the prices are set like a utility. We just tell you how much it costs and raise your bill. We don't have to raise taxes. We don't have to go through the budget process. It's just passed on. I'm not sure what other issues are out there that can be addressed like that. But again, the city of Portland's a major utility as well as being a policymaking government. And so it has big impacts on people's lives through costs on things like this water supply. We're not going to be able to change world issues. We can do things that we can do here, like the housing provision and more housing is something we can have a lever on, but it takes a while. But things like this, to have a project going forward that has no financial impact analysis on how it affects individuals. We are having people losing their housing because they can't afford to pay their utility bills. We should take responsibility for that.
Thank you. And so you're listening to Running on Air, a program of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Corey Elia. Today, we're speaking with candidates from District 3. I have here with me candidates Rex Burkholder and Jesse Cornett. Join the conversation. We want to hear from you. Call your questions into the air room at 503-231-8187. That number again is 503-231-8187. Or by messaging us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. So, you guys spoke on this a little bit, the connection between the city, the county, joint office. So this next question is, the relationship between the city of Portland and Multnomah County has been rocky recently, particularly around the Joint Office of Homeless Services and the contract. How would you approach collaboration with the county? We'll start over here with Jesse.
I want to reframe your question, not how would I, but how do I approach collaboration? Yesterday, I was the only city council candidate that sat in the county commission chambers to listen to the annual report by the Joint Office of Homelessness Services and hear what the director, Dan Fields, and his top leadership had to say. And there's a reality that City Hall is pretty close to county commission headquarters. There's a great bridge. There's a bike path across it. For me, it's right smack dab in between my house and City Hall. So I think there's going to be an element of physically being there, meeting with folks, whether it's constituents or other elected officials, who in some cases will be my constituents, meet folks where they're at. We have treated the county as if they're an adversary. The county's a partner. And I think moving forward, we have to reframe it and make sure we're treating them like partners, even when they're doing things that we may not necessarily like. I think what the city did with passing a 3-year contract, but with a look back on October 15th, exemplifies that.
Nice. Thank you. And then sliding over here to Rex Burkholder.
I've spent many years working with groups of people and learning how to work well with them and actually achieve the outcomes that you want. I think the number one question that came in my mind as a citizen watching this process happening, it was that there was a lack of agreement on what outcomes wanted to be, that we wanted to achieve between the two organizations, and then a lack of accountability for achieving that. This is the same thing working with the board of directors, working with the Metro Council. It's sitting down and saying, where are we trying to get to, and then what ways can get us there successfully? And then looking back and saying, did we do the work that we said we're going to do? This, it seems to me there's been some lack of accountability. There's also, and unfortunately, there's personalities that get in here too, right? Some people just don't get along and they don't work well together. And that is unfortunate that derails a lot of important activities and misspends lots of money. So it's about this teamwork concept of that we are here to serve and fulfill the needs of the people who live in our community, and that's what we need to be looking at first. And how you do that is doing it rationally, based on numbers, based on shared values, and work from there, which can get you over a lot of difficulties in terms of both personalities, in terms of different strategies. But again, if you always measure them by the same measure and same values, that can overcome a lot of those challenges. And I've seen that in my career many times, working in the legislature, working with the Metro Council, working as an advocate.
Nice. Thank you. So homelessness locally is like a really big issue for Portland. It has become more visible since the pandemic. So the Portland City Council had to rewrite the Portland City camping ban repeatedly and then finally got it implemented. Do you support Portland's homeless camping ban? If so, why? If not, why? We'll start over here with Rex.
Well, I can't tell you I know every detail about it. So, and if I don't know that every detail about something, I'm loath to say, yes, I'm in support of that, or no, I'm against it. I think the concept, though, again, the outcome is that no one should have to sleep on the street, right? And no one should sleep on the street, both sides. So how do you solve that problem? Well, you have a place for them to go, and you have resources for them when they do go there so they can avoid that situation in the future. As you know, people who are living on the street are as victimized or more victimized than anybody else in terms of crime, in terms of abuse, in terms of crime. They are suffering. And so our responsibility as a society is to make sure that people are safe. And this includes giving them some place to go and then saying, how can we help you with the next step? So again, the camping ban itself is just one of the many tools that you use to say, how do we move, how do we give you a place where you can be safe and flourish?
Nice. Okay. And then over here to Jesse Cornett.
The triple crises of mental health, addiction, and homelessness that we're seeing on our streets in full display right now have a start date. It was January 20th, 1981, when Ronald Reagan was sworn in to be president. The first thing that he did was deinstitutionalize mental health in America with a promise of a community-based solution. The second thing he did was lower the top marginal tax rate, knowing there would never be a solution. We're seeing that in full display today. We have had so many opportunities over the last 40-plus years, so many inflection points, so many ways to stop things. We've made decisions as a city. Let's, instead of investing in housing, let's figure out where people can camp. Those are the wrong decisions. The people that made those decisions in office should be held accountable. I've spoke to the mental health, what was that? That my brain is completely blanking on, Jason Renaud's group, Mental Health Association of Portland, a couple weekends ago, where this topic came up. We are getting pitted against each other as a community. We should not be talking about jail. We should be talking about creating spaces for people to be and to feel safe. If you look at the hierarchy of needs, people have to have four walls. We have to, maybe that's not directly in there, but tents aren't a solution. They're not the right decision for any business. They're not the right decision for any homeowner whose primary lifetime investment is probably their house. And as bad as it is for either of those groups of people, it is 1 million times worse for anyone that must live inside of the tents. And I'm somebody that grew up with significant housing instability. Over the course of years, we lived in an old converted school bus in sub-zero temperatures at times. So for me, I have lived experience in this. And due to my addiction as an adult and my struggles, I actually, even though I will protest the overarching idea of addiction leading to homelessness, because of mine, I did spend time as an adult in Portland, Oregon, living in my vehicle for a very short time until a friend found out and put me up. This is a struggle that I've seen through my life, and I haven't liked the frame that we've had to put on this. And when we take office next year, we're going to have to look at innovative ways to ensure people have somewhere to go so we don't have to talk about storing their stuff and locking them up.
Nice. Thank you. So this is just a question from a listener real quick before we wrap up. How do you think ranked choice voting has impacted this election cycle? And what has the voter response been to ranked choice voting, in your opinion? We'll start with Jesse Cornett here.
I don't think people are fully clued into what ranked choice voting is yet. And I don't think we're ever going to fully achieve that, even in this election. If you look at statistics, 40% of people that vote for a president, at least 40% of the people that vote for president will not vote for either Rex Burkhardt or Jesse Cornett or any of the 28 other people on this particular ballot. So I got to admit, I ran for office when I was younger, and generally as a human being, my elbows were a lot sharper. What I've really liked about this is I don't give a rip what Rex may have ever done wrong in terms of a voter as a human being or any of the other 28 people running. It has really inspired us to sort of get along and find out what we have in common over everything else. So I think it's been very healthy for the city, even though I think it's going to take us a while to figure it out.
Nice. And then sliding over here to Rex Burkholder.
Well, I think it has reduced the adversarial nature of politics, and which is really a welcome thing to me. And Jesse and I were talking about this the other day at an event. You know, I said, hey, Jesse said, hey, is my opponent Rex Burkholder? I said, no, I'm not your opponent. I'm a competitor in a race, and then think about at the Olympics, okay, swimming or running, okay, you get three people on the podium, and they may differ by a tenth of a second, but there's three people, and they're going to go on and work together, versus the kind of lizard brain stuff about, you know, what's wrong with this other person, and that's what I have to think about. Instead of that, it's more like, what can I offer? You know, is there something I'm offering that's of value to the people? And that's what I have to talk about, and there's other great people running. But it's so it puts the onus on the candidate to think to present themselves and what they offer versus attacking others. And that is the, you know, it's why I jumped in, one of the reasons I jumped in the race. And one of the things I hope comes out of this system, even if we can't understand the little black box that's going to make the decision, people will, I think, appreciate the fact it's more of a competition of ideas and that they don't have to choose between good and evil. It's between, oh, here's some good people. Which are the three who are, you know, put themselves forward, should I support?
So
can I add one thing?
Yes, just real quick.
I think that the majority of the people running are doing this because we want to have the highest positive impact on our community possible. And a majority of those realize that you don't do that by pissing people off. You make friends. If I'm not in city council, I want to talk to Rex about housing and my thoughts on housing, and vice versa, I would guess.
I'd talk to you about bikes. How's
excellent.
That sound?
I like it, while we're riding them.
All right, so real quick before we wrap up, so if our listeners are interested in learning more about your guys' campaign, what's the best way for them to do that, Rex?
Well, it's easy, rex4pdx.com. Lots of information there.
Nice, and then Jesse?
I'm going to give two ways, cornetteforportland.com. Or if you got your pen ready, 971-219-5429. Shoot me a text. Give me a call.
Cool. Thank you, guys. This has been a pleasure in this interview. So for listeners at home, you've been listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I've been here with Rex Burkholder and Jesse Cornett from District 3. You can find all episodes of the Running on Air program on KBOO website. That's kboo.fm/runningonair. Episodes are also available wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to all the KBOO volunteers who helped make this happen. Our engineers are Arthur Risotto and Althea Billings, and Bob Davis. Our producer is Althea Billings, and our editor is Eric Loschner. Tune in to the next episode of Running on Air. It will be with candidates from District 4 tomorrow, 9 a.m. Thank you. I've been your host, Corey Elia, and have a good day.
Thank you, Corey. Thanks, Corey.